This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now through a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just plain old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk, so maybe you can do that. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind landmark projects. You can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check them out at screenfeed.com. Jose Avalos has been leading Intel's digital signage practice since 2009, evangelizing for the use of Intel chipsets and related technologies for the devices that play back content. When he got started, he says Intel was inside about 10% of the boxes used in digital signage. Now it's more like 75%, he says. So from that measure, something worked. But over that time, smartphones and then smart TVs really bubbled up, and Intel has seen low-cost ARM processors being touted and used inside set-top boxes and sticks and smart displays as media players. That cuts out the need, in theory, for Intel CPUs. In our chat, we talk about Intel's role in this sector, the implications of ARM processors and system-on-chip displays, and what they're doing about it. We also get into Intel's dabbling in the software side of the business and talk about IoT. Jose's a talker, but I did get a few words in here and there. Enjoy.
Jose, thank you for your time.
David, always a pleasure, never a task.
Well, we can change that. It sounds like a silly question, but why don't we get straight to it? Like, what is Intel's role in specifically in digital signage? And I'm curious how IoT dovetails into it, how that's emerging, because I know you're very active in that part of it too.
Oh my gosh, I can speak about that for hours, but let me get started.
I only need one question then, and I'll just wind you up and go?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, go.
No, I had the privilege of co-founding the digital signage business at Intel back in 2009. When I look back, it's amazing to see the progress that we had made, David. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing to me. At the end of the first year, our revenue was in the single digits, mm-hmm. millions of dollars. And the analysts said that we had about 12% market share worldwide. So maybe one out of 10 digital signs worldwide was being driven by Intel architecture. Additionally, it was clear to me that the industry was moving towards a cloud to thin client architecture.
Yep.
And I really felt strongly that that was the wrong way to go, right? Because I had seen what had happened with the set-top box industry in the 90s in the US, mm-hmm. where all these cable companies basically deploy all this really dumb analog set-top boxes, these really thin clients into people's homes.
Right.
And then, just to save a few dollars, and then what it did, it prevented them from making hundreds of dollars per month on services for 15 years.
Yeah.
Right? So they were locked in into a platform where they couldn't deliver any services, right? Today, I pay over $100 on my cable to my cable company on a monthly service, and that's what they missed out for about 15 years, right? So, in summary, the end of the first year, we were driving about 1 out of 10 signs worldwide.
And what were the rest? Were they?
Most of the rest was there was
video
some
decoder or.
There was some from one of our main CPU competitors. They had about the same market share.
Okay. AMD at that time.
And then there were others, but I mean it was largely others. But we were number four. We were the four largest architecture in the digital signage space back
really?
Then.
I would have assumed you were like number one even.
No,
then.
We were not. No.
Wow.
So then.
So you saved Intel's business then.
We created a new business. See, what happened is I realized that this industry was really fragmented,
yep.
right?
And not like now.
We're still very fragmented. but the thing to realize with fragmented industries is that there's disadvantages and there's also advantages. Mm-hmm. One of the key disadvantages is that we have to support hundreds of customers and we have a humongous ecosystem that we need to manage, right? Mm-hmm. But on the positive side, because it's so fragmented and so localized, you get tremendous innovation in digital signage. So that was kind of the state of the business back then. Now I fast forward to today, right? The analysts say now that we have about 75% market share in digital signage. That means that we're driving three out of four signs worldwide.
That's good math.
Yeah, I'm quick. I took calculus in college. So, whether it's, you know, retail, corporate, education, QSR, you name it, right?
Yep.
We're the main architecture driving that compute and these media players for the displays. Now, the other thing that is really nice now is that the majority of our business has moved now to our core architecture. So clearly, the industry has moved from a cloud to thin client to now to a cloud to tech client.
Right.
And that creates a huge opportunity for everybody else, right? Because now you can use that tech client to really drive experiences that are really engaging, that are really fun, that are really productive for the consumer. And you can also collect anonymous bid analytics and be able to have a dialogue with the consumer and create a conversation. So when I look at the industry back then versus today, you know, we have really made a lot of progress. I'm really proud of my team. I think they have done a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. So that's digital signage. Now, the other thing that happened, you know, after a couple of years that I had been running the business, I realized that I could take digital signage as an ingredient mm-hmm. and integrate it into other product categories and completely revolutionize them. Or in some cases, create brand new product categories. Let me give you some examples. When I was a kid, and that was about in 1975, you know, and I was using a vending machine to get a Coke or a Pepsi out of the machine, mm-hmm. I pretty much used it the same way that I used it in 2005. It was the same box, you know, it was same usage model. Nothing had changed. There was no innovation for 3 years, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what happens when you integrate a smart digital sign into the vending machine, right? Now you got a digital sign integrated into the machine that is remotely managed. Mm-hmm. So now you can do a dual GUI. You can have an attraction GUI where you can run advertising, or you can run messaging about your brand. Then with proximity sensors, you can switch to a product GUI when a person approaches the vending machine.
Right.
Now you can switch to a product GUI. Now with that product GUI, you can give the customer choices, right? You can also give them information about the product. You can give them nutritional information, right? For example, an example of choices is, you know, the work that we have done with Pepsi in the US, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be that you would go to a soda fountain from Pepsi and you could choose maybe, you know, 7-9 different flavors.
Yep.
Today you go and you can mix thousands, tens of thousands of flavors. So that gives the consumer a lot of choice, mm-hmm. right? So to me that's really exciting. Now
you've also got the back end of it too, that you can report back to the vending company that, hey, we're low on syrup or whatever that.
Yes, you can optimize your inventory, you can optimize your routing for your trucks for the inventory. And in addition to that, building on your idea here, you can also do preventive maintenance. So if you notice that, you know, a motor is pulling more energy than it is supposed to do, then you know that it's going to fail in the next couple of days, so you can proactively go fix that, mm-hmm. you know, proactively fix the machine. Now, if it's a machine that is maybe has ice cream, now you potentially you save $1,000 to $2,000 worth of product, right?
Sure.
So now you can also run social campaigns, mm-hmm. you know, so the usage model changes completely. You completely revolutionize that product. Mm-hmm. And we have done that over and over and again.
Right.
Again, we did it with interactive whiteboards to turn, you know, traditional classrooms into digital classrooms, both in education and mm-hmm. also in corporate environments. We've done it with kiosks. You know, we're doing interactive kiosks in transportation, in retail, in a lot of different verticals. In Southeast Asia, well, we created a new product category called visual banking kiosks, where you can conduct 90% of the transactions that you would conduct in a bank. You can actually talk to a real life teller on the screen, mm-hmm. right? So you don't have to run to the bank and waste your whole evening. You can just go to the 7-Eleven next door and conduct your banking transaction. We've done it with digital jukeboxes that are going into restaurants and QSR, with intelligent vending and dispensing, mm-hmm. as I mentioned before, with intelligent shelving, for example. You know, it turns out, this is really funny, David, it turns out that more than 90% of new products that go into grocery stores fail. And the reason they fail, most people don't know, is very simple. The majority of homemakers in the US, according to the research, mm-hmm. is that most of them only cooks 5 to 7 different dishes. So they always buy the same things over and over again.
Right.
So when you introduce a new product, they don't know how to use it. They don't know what the value proposition is. Mm-hmm. But now, if you bring digital signage to the point of sale, to the point of decision, now you can educate the consumer on the new product.
Right.
You know, what are the benefits of the product? What is the value proposition? What are some potential recipes? How can you combine that, you know, product with all the dishes that you already cook? And the probability of that product being successful now becomes much higher.
Right.
So we've been, in summary, we've been able to integrate digital signage technology as an ingredient into all these other product categories and completely revolutionize the usage model, mm-hmm. and in some cases create new product categories.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of those things that you were talking about, let's say 5-6 years ago, if you were showing them in an Intel booth, these were sort of ideas or proofs of concept,
yeah.
that sort of thing. And the big challenge was really that this is great, but display technology is still very expensive, software is complicated, on and on and on and on. So a lot of it didn't happen. Was there a certain point when things tipped, the retailer started adopting this stuff instead of just looking at it?
I think that's a much bigger question. And that's where we can start getting into what's happening with the Internet of Things, mm-hmm. and why the Internet of Things is getting so much hype.
What's that? I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, some people think it's the most hype, you know, new technology or innovation. And you know, to be frank, you know, you read about it in newspapers, in magazines, you see it on television, mm-hmm. people talk about it in trade shows like this. But the question is, why now? Why not 10 years ago? Why not 5 years from now? And,
sure.
And the reason is that there's really three global trends that are driving the opportunity and the opportunities now, right? And this is the reason why a lot of the analysts are predicting that we're going to have 20 billion things
sure.
connected to the internet, you know, by 2020. And basically what's happening is, if you look at the last 10 years, for example, the price of sensors has dropped 2x. Mm-hmm. The price of bandwidth has dropped 40x. The price of compute processing has dropped 60x. It's crazy. I mean, at Intel, we invest billions of dollars every single year to make compute smaller, mm-hmm. more powerful, and more energy efficient, right? Today, we can develop a whole system on the size of the button of my shirt.
Yeah.
And that system will have memory, it will have compute, and it will have connectivity. Mm-hmm. So the implication of that is massive.
Yeah.
Now I can put compute intelligence into everything. I can put it into this table, I can put it into this chair.
Soil sensor, or just whatever.
I can give you a great example. We work with a system integrator in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Malaysia is a country that exports rice, right? And so they wanted to reduce water consumption. So we deployed gateways that were linked to weather analytics.
Yep.
And not only did we reduce the total water consumption by 30%, but because of the way we did it, they were able to go from 2 crops per year to 3. Mm-hmm. So we increased their production by 50% on average. Mm-hmm. So if you're a farmer and you're exporting your rice and your production goes by 50% and you're using 30% less water annually, that is a huge impact
sure.
to your business. Right? So we've done that with IoT technology. So a lot of people think IoT is just about connecting and making things intelligent, but it's a lot more than that. It's a lot bigger than that. We can actually go address, you know, big world problems like, you know, feeding the hungry, like solving, you know, populations in mm-hmm. mega cities and things like this.
Yeah, and I've said for a long time in digital signage, we've lived in a world of kind of planned and scheduled content based on largely guesswork or experience as to what people want to see. And the future really is around data, real-time data that can draw out a screen and give you information that you would never otherwise know. And, you know, using the soil sample like that, you imagine the Department of Agriculture in Jakarta being able to show soil conditions all across the country in real time.
Yeah.
To their workers, to the people in the field, to their, you know, business partners and everything else. It's mind-blowing all the stuff you could do with that if you could get that data and be able to, you know, with HTML5 and everything, just very simply visualize it.
You know, what you just mentioned about digital signage, mm-hmm. it's not just happening in digital signage. It's happening across all
sure.
sorts of different devices. And this is really what IoT is doing, right? So what we see in terms of a signature of evolution for devices, what we see is that you start with an analog device. Mm-hmm. Then you make it digital. Mm-hmm. Then you connect it. Then you make it intelligent.
Yeah.
Then you start collecting anonymous bit analytics that you can turn into business intelligence. Then in the future, mostly in the future, there are some solutions that are doing this already today, you infuse artificial intelligence. So now the analytics, the data that you're collecting, you can turn into business intelligence, and the system becomes autonomous, whereas the system now can decide by itself what is the right content to show to this audience at this very moment, right? Mm-hmm. So in digital signage, we started with a poster. Then we decided, hey, let's make it digital. And then once it was digital, then we said, well, if we connect it to the internet, we can change that context real time.
Sure.
Once we connected to the internet, we said, wow, you know, sometimes the power is so dirty that it corrupts the binaries in the OS. Maybe we want to remotely manage it so that when we get a black screen or blue screen, we can actually download a new image of the US and recover that sign and reduce our total cost of ownership.
Hence AMT.
Exactly, mm-hmm. AMT. You know, it's one of the technologies in our BPRO brand. And then once it becomes intelligent and connected, then we say, well, if it's intelligent and connected, why can't we collect anonymous media analytics so that we can understand our customer, right? So now we know what are the preferences, what are the product desires of our customer, and we also understand our audience. Now, if you're coming from an advertising environment or a brand in their environment, now you can measure attention span. And attention span can be an indicator for what content really works.
Right.
So you can do, you know, doing different creatives is relatively inexpensive, but running a big advertising campaign is very expensive. So maybe what you do is you create three different types of creative, you test it very quickly, you figure out what really works for what audience, and that's the content that you play,
right?
Now, the site now becomes intelligent, connected, it's collecting analytics. Mm-hmm. Now you put in some artificial intelligence with some recommendation engines, and you can turn that that data into business intelligence, and you can have the site be autonomous and actually decide what content is gonna fetch on the screen. Mm-hmm.
So talking about video analytics, you bought Cognivision, well, not you personally, but Intel bought Cognivision 2010, something like that.
Yeah, 2011, around that time frame.
Was it too early? Like you invested in them too early and the marketplace wasn't ready for video analytics? Because now you see it marketed in a bunch of ways and people are talking about business intelligence and audience intelligence and so on, but back then it was still a bit of a novelty?
Well, you know, maybe it was too early, but maybe not. And the reason I say maybe not is because by Intel acquiring the company,
the IP
capability, well, the company, we actually acquired the company, it created a tremendous interest in analytics.
Okay.
And it actually sensitized the industry to start thinking that maybe I don't need a cloud to think client. Maybe I need a cloud to take client because I'm gonna want to know who my customer is. Right? So, you know, when you look at it from an industry perspective, I think it benefited the industry because people started paying attention to analytics and people started paying attention to tech clients, which now is actually really beneficial because what our research is telling us, and I'm kind of switching on you a little bit, what our research is telling us is that when you look at millennials and the relationship that millennials want to have with a brand, millennials actually they not only want to have just a discussion with the brand, they want to shape the brand, right? So if you're a brand and you know that your consumers want to shape your brand and want to shape how your brand develops over time, how do you do that? And the best vehicle to do that is to draw it to an analytics because the analytics allow you to have a conversation with a millennial where now you know what are their product desires, what are their needs, and then you can be shaping your brand to adjust it to their needs and desires.
Right. But the AIM suite itself, I think you still market it, but it's not really being developed anymore?
The actual product that we introduced to the market, we still market it, our customers use it. Mm-hmm. There are other activities that are related to it, so we do invest in analytics.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
Let's talk about ARM. Is when ARM started...
What is that?
Yeah, not an appendage. Let's say 3-4 years ago when you started to see all these low-cost devices coming over from Shenzhen and elsewhere, there were many opinions out there that, oh, this is going to be a problem for any kind of x86-based Intel device because this stuff is so cheap. But it hasn't really played out that way, has it? And
Not worldwide.
Yeah.
Not worldwide. To be honest, when we saw the emergence of the what I call the sub-entry media players, mm-hmm. or dumb digital signage, you know, I was quite concerned about it, right? There was a lot of hype around them.
Sure.
There were some companies in, you know, some brand names that are actually pretty recognizable in the digital signage ecosystem. They started investing in them, you know, in the U.S. and in Europe, and I was quite concerned. But then, you know, a year to 2 years after, as I talked to them, as I talked to these companies, and they continued to make noise, I would ask, well, how many units did you ship this year? And it was always in the single-digit thousands.
Sure.
So they never really took off in North America and in Europe. In fact, one of the big CMS vendors in North America actually decided to invest on a platform for ARM with a non-Microsoft OS, and they had so many difficulties that just this last year they decided to switch back to Intel architecture.
Possibly a company in Montreal?
Possibly. Mm. So we're seeing that in North America, we're seeing that in Europe, but where it did take off was in China. So okay. In China you have, I would say that about 60% of the market in China is either entry or sub-entry, mm-hmm. and a significant portion of that is ARM, and then another significant portion of it is Intel architecture. Mm-hmm. So it was somewhat successful in China, but I haven't really seen it be successful in other parts of the world.
Right.
I mean, your intuition would tell you that, well, if it was successful in China, maybe it can be successful in Turkey or Mexico or Malaysia or Indonesia. Mm-hmm. But we really haven't seen that. And okay. And the reason is people like brands. People like quality. And so even in places like Turkey.
And they don't like failure?
Well, you said that. But but those are not my words. But
okay.
People in Turkey, people in Mexico, people in Indonesia, they like brands. They like mm-hmm. quality. And, you know, we sell a lot of core processors in Southeast Asia. We sell a lot of core processors in Turkey and Latin America. Mm-hmm. So we haven't really seen it take off the way people projected that it would. It makes some inroads in the very low-end entry part of the market, sub-entry in China, but everywhere else it hasn't really taken off.
Mm-hmm. You talked about miniaturization and the CPU, the size of your button. The one area where ARM seems to have taken some hold, at least, is with system-on-chip displays. And I mean, as of this week, all of the big boys, with the arguable exception of NEC, have ARM-based SoCs. And they seem to be pushing all in on that. Like, the guys I talked to all said, all of our displays moving forward are going to ship with SoC. So that would seem to be a problem for independent players. Do you foresee a day when, right now there are ARM SoCs, if you're talking about that kind of miniaturization, why couldn't that be an x86 system on chip?
Well, maybe you can predict the future, David, because today we're announcing...
What do you
mean maybe? Well, you predicted it just now. Today we're introducing what is called the Intel Smart Display Module, which is a module that you will be able to integrate directly into your screen. Okay. And, you know, we're announcing 10 ecosystem partners tonight that are developing displays mm-hmm. and integrated media players. Four of those companies are in the top 10 list of display vendors worldwide. So
NEC would be an obvious one because they've already got a slot or a bay where you could snap that in, right?
I can't really mention names because it's not announced yet, but...
This podcast is not going to be on for at least a week.
Well,
we
can do an update next week. But a couple of things about what I would say about the SoCs, the SoC market. There are some display companies that are very ambitious about selling their glass.
Yes.
So they integrate SoCs. Sometimes they even provide their own CMS for free. And they chip it with their solution.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that it gets used.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
I mean, a lot of the CMS that are chipped for free, they're free for a reason.
Yes.
Right? And most people don't use them, right? So,
well, a lot of the SoC displays that are shipping out for digital signage, they're not using the SoCs
correct.
Either. They're plugging in a media player.
That's exactly my point.
I don't know how many.
That's exactly my point. And yeah. The analogy that I would say is like Bluetooth on cell phones, right? Mm-hmm. The utilization of Bluetooth on cell phones is actually really low.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect business model, right? It's like the gym.
Yeah.
The gym's love for everybody to register and never show up.
Yes.
That's their business model, right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, it's kind of an analogy, but it's what's happening to some extent in some of these parts of the market where people are integrating very entry-level SoCs that allow you to really enable sub-entry or really dumb digital signage.
Right.
And if that's what you need, well, that meets your needs. But if you want something to be interactive, something to be managed, something to be remotely managed, if you want to collect analytics, that solution doesn't work.
But at the same time, by getting into this and making this announcement, apparently in a few hours, you're obviously seeing that SoC or embedded smarts within it. Commercial display panel is a thing and you need it to be there.
What we're seeing is that our customers are asking us for integrated solutions.
Okay.
They want higher levels of integration.
And OPS isn't doing it for them?
Well, OPS works. Mm-hmm. If OPS works in some segments of the market, it has been very successful in education.
Right.
You know, the reason we developed OPS, you know, you and I were running in the 80s and 70s when we used to buy cars and they would come with a really crappy stereo, and then you go buy a Pioneer and you pull the old stereo, you plug in the new stereo, right?
Yeah.
So when we started talking about OPS.
I had 8-track tapes.
Well, there
I'm
you go.
So damn old.
So that's where I got the idea for OPS, right? I basically started thinking, you know, we're gonna have hundreds of thousands of digital classrooms in Turkey, mm-hmm. and a lot of these schools are not gonna have an IT department. So what's the teacher gonna do if something goes wrong? Even if there's nothing wrong with the media player, it would be really nice for the teacher to just be able to turn off the power or unplug the interactive whiteboard from the wall.
Yep.
You know, pull out an OPS media player, plug in a new one,
yep.
plug back in the interactive whiteboard, and turn it on.
FedEx right? the bad one to Ankara or whatever, and
right.
you're done. Yeah.
And so that was the idea behind it. But so OPS has really worked well in transportation venues and in education, but we've seen that our customers want choice of form factors. So we have innovated this new solution that we call Intel Smart Display Module, but we're taking a different approach than the SoC guys. The SoC guys are focusing on sub-entry digital signage, mm-hmm. right? What we're gonna do is we're gonna drive in solutions at the entry level, at the mainstream, and at the high end.
Okay.
Right? So you'll be able to integrate a media player regardless of performance. So if you want something—
So you'd have like an i5 and an i7 potentially in these
yeah,
things?
Yeah, okay. Even a Xeon.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to be able to have, you know, your basic digital signage where, and you'll be able to have mainstream digital signage that can be remotely managed, that can run analytics, and then you'll be able to have signage that for large format displays mm-hmm. or for video walls. So our strategy
so
is a little bit different.
60 frames a second, 44K display, and it's not going to be dropping frames and everything else.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So that's, and funny you should mention that. In addition to that, we're also introducing another form factor today that we call OPS Plus. And what we have done with OPS Plus is we have added an additional connector to support the high video resolution usage models. So eventually with this new connector with OPS Plus, we're gonna be able to support 4K, 8K, and we're gonna be able to support hybrid usage models where the customer wants to mm-hmm. use digital signage in combination with video usage models.
Right.
So either video recording or video broadcasting or, you know, video analytics.
Now, this new version that you'll be able to snap into a display, is this like a big number, the equivalent of buying an Intel Nook or something, or is it a $45 board, or how is all that gonna work?
Because we will have entry level to high mm-hmm. end, there will be price points from the that are consistent with entry level players in the marketplace
okay.
to mainstream to high end. So yeah, you'll see all sorts of different ASPs for entry level to high end.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean for external players for the signage market? Do you see that going away?
No, you know, customers like choice. I mean, to be honest with you, 50% of the industry that uses Intel architecture still uses PCs. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just call, you know, Dell or HP and order a PC to drive their digital signage.
Yeah.
Right?
At least first time around.
Mostly small and medium-sized businesses, right?
Yeah.
And mostly the first time around, right?
Then they learn about fans and...
Yeah, because a lot of those devices were not designed to
yeah.
be 7x24, right? Commercial applications, right? But no, customers like choice. Some customers like the standalone media players, other people like OPS,
mm-hmm.
and then now we have customers that are asking us for integrated solutions. So we want to give our customers a choice.
The other thing we haven't talked about is RCM, your retail client manager, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, you acquired the software, I'm not sure which company, I don't think you've ever said what company it was. was, but is that actively marketed and used? Like, do you have a lot of installs out there, or is it something you're kind of providing almost like free, like some of the Korean guys?
No, we don't provide it for free. We had a customer, a very big brand, that asked us for a solution. Mm-hmm. So we were in a situation where, you know, we wanted to satisfy the needs of our customers. So that's why we did that development, mm-hmm. right?
Did you develop it, or you bought a company?
Well, no, we bought the IP. Uh-huh. But in order for it to have Intel branding, it has to go through our quality levels and uh-huh. a level of quality, and they will require our products. So we had to do 6 to 9 months of extensive work to bring it to Intel quality levels for product. So, and we did it for a customer, and yep. that customer today is running their entire network on that CMS.
So we big is that network?
You know, I'm not sure that I can say, and I'm not sure that I know, actually, to be honest. So if I give you a number, I can give you the wrong number. But we do have multiple customers that use it. It's, mm-hmm. it's not a large footprint, mm-hmm. right? But it is a large customer. But we did find that it created a lot of confusion in the ecosystem. And given that it's already a pretty fragmented ecosystem,
yeah.
we will support it for our customers, but we're not really marketing it.
Yeah, so you're basically saying, guys, business partners, we're not trying to compete with you. We right. did this for a deal, but this is, you know, we don't want to be the next CMS out there because there's already 800 of you.
Yeah, there is about 800 of them. And what's funny too is that it's really fragmented. I mean, if you look at two countries that are very similar, actually shared language in a lot of regions, if you look at, for example, Switzerland and Germany, and you map the top 10 CMS companies at both countries, you might have one that is on both lists. I mean, so it's just very, very fragmented.
Yeah, I mean, just walking around this show, I think I've run into about 8 companies from Sweden and 3 or 4 from Norway. What's going on? There's just so many of them.
Yeah, so customers have a lot of choice.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned before, that's one of the benefits of having a fragmented industry is that you get a lot of innovation.
Right.
And so that's one area where we got too much innovation, maybe just too many choices for customers.
Right. So this new, what is the product again that you're announcing?
So we're announcing 2 new form factors.
Right.
They're form factors, they're not products.
We the OPS do Plus, but what's the other
one? We do reference. One is the OPS Plus, which is the next generation of the OPS. And then the second one is called Intel Smart Display Module,
right. okay.
or Intel SDM.
So is that kind of like the big thing for 2017 for Intel in terms of, in the context of digital signage?
Well, there's multiple things, okay. right? We're really innovating our business across a lot of different fronts. We're innovating on form factors with the 2 form factors that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. We're also innovating in new product categories. You know, a lot of our focus is in retail because retail is the largest vertical for digital signage and visual retail. And we just had our CEO, Brian Krasenik, do a keynote at NRF, at the National Retail Federation show mm-hmm. in New York City. And he announced a $100 million investment fund to go focus on responsive retail, right? So responsive retail will be a solution that, a holistic end-to-end solution that will integrate a lot of these point digital experiences in right. retail, right? So that you can get your digital signage to work better with your RFID system, with your inventory system,
with
your POS,
on.
With everything.
So it's making real all this whiz bang stuff that people produce into cool looking videos, but somebody actually has to build it.
Yeah, so responsive retail is a really big focus area for mm-hmm. us from a retail perspective. In my business, official retail, we're doing the form factor innovation, but we're also doing some category creation mm-hmm. and we also new product capabilities. What we're finding is that when you start integrating video workloads with digital signage workloads at the edge, mm-hmm. the workload increases significantly. And because most of the solutions are end-to-end, because you got cloud and then you got clients, what happens is if you have a heavy video workload coupled with a digital signage workload at the edge, it's very difficult to send everything to the cloud. Mm-hmm. So there's a need for almost like an on-premise cloud, touching a lot of those
right.
clients.
Which you can now do with certain, almost like even little CPUs can be their own servers, right?
Well, but in this case, because the workload is so high, you actually need a pretty heavy processing and storage and gateway and connectivity. So we developed a reference design that we call the visual data device. The reference is called the Intel Visual Data Reference Design. Mm-hmm. We launched it in China in November, And we already have a couple of OEMs and system integrators mm-hmm. developing in China. This week, one of our Taiwanese partners is going to announce a similar product. And then we have a number of customers in the US and in Europe developing this type of product also. So we're doing category creation and also product categories. We're also starting to ramp kiosks for smart cities. You know, we got our big first design with one of our customers that is going to be deploying in a big city in the US here mm-hmm. in the next couple of months. And we got a ton of different pilots going on right now okay. with kiosks for smart cities. So there's a number of new product categories that, okay. that we're focusing in. In Southeast Asia, we continue to ramp our virtual banking kiosks, mm-hmm. and we're going to start ramping those in also in China. Interactive whiteboards, I mean, our initial strategy was really to focus on countries where you had centralized decision making and you have high investment, high GDP investment in education. So we really focus on Turkey yep. and China. And now we've been focusing in other areas. So we've been winning designs across Europe and Africa and Latin America. So we're expanding that business
right.
too.
Okay.
So, you know, we're trying to innovate across all aspects of our business.
All right, last question. You're a digital science geek. You're engineer by training, I assume.
Yes.
When you walk around a show like ISE, what have you seen that kind of made you stop and go, oh, that's interesting?
You know, the quality of the displays.
Okay.
The quality of the displays, I mean, it's just, some of the displays are just simply amazing, right? I mean, I go to NRF every year at the beginning of the year, and when I go to Times Square, and to me, Times Square is like, you know, digital signage heaven.
Yeah.
I like to go there and just kind of look at all the different displays. Mm-hmm. And I'm just amazed with how the quality of the display just continues to improve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just beautiful displays. So that's, you know, there's a lot of technology behind it, but what the consumer sees is at the end of the day is the display, you know, the image in the display. And, you know, I gave a couple of talks this morning, and one of the gentlemen that was in the audience approached me and said, hey, you know, I wrote an article about this digital signage network at a specific location, and I basically said it's really boring. And I said, you know, deploying the latest technology is not enough. You got to keep the content fresh,
yeah.
and you got to make it relevant, right? I mean, to give you an example, we, with one of our system integrators, we deploy a large digital signage network in the U.S. With a phone company,
mm-hmm.
and it was the latest technology, but the attention span of consumers was really, really low, in a few seconds range.
4 seconds, maybe.
And this was a place, a location where you have a captive audience for 30 minutes, you know, for 20 to 30 minutes. And they were looking at this place for 4 seconds, right?
Yeah.
So obviously the customer was very disappointed, right? It's like, well, we invested in the latest technology, this is not working. It was the content.
Yeah.
As soon as we changed the content, we run analytics and we knew what was happening.
Yeah.
As soon as we changed the content, everything changed.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not about the screen, it's about what's on the screen.
Right. And you know, it's really a, I think the challenge is we got to keep the technology fresh, which means that you have to replace it every 2 to 3 years. But the content, you have to keep it fresh and relevant, and you got to replace it either real time or
faster.
At a minimum every month.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jose, thank you.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure. Never a task.
Well, I tried.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 169, that's 16-9.net every day. 169 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.